Tarry here, where the stories never grow old, and you hear something new every time they are told and it comes clear. So tarry here, where it doesn't matter your age, and when we gather round the table, we all take the stage year after year. So tarry here.
Welcome to the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenedradio.org. I'm Fanny Crawford.
And I'm Stasi Okowski.
And today is Monday, March 27th, 2023.
All right.
We are still celebrating Women's History Month, so this is part four of Women's History. And I don't know about you, Stash, but I'm going a little sideways here today. I'm going to do something a little different. And okay. I know you've got things prepared for our audience. But we want to thank Andy Offit Irwin.
Yes.
For opening the show for us, as always. And I will say a little bit more about Andy later on in the show. And you want to talk about Speak, I think.
I certainly do. Well, coming up, we have a wonderful woman that's going to speak in April, Carmen Agra Devi.
Woohoo!
Yes. I don't know of anybody who ever said, yeah, I could take it or leave it with her. And I don't think I've ever heard anybody say anything like that. You know, she's such an exciting and fun storyteller. She's an award-winning author of 15 books for young readers. And one of them is called 14 Cows for America. I haven't read that book. I think I should look for it. She is an accomplished lecturer, having been a guest speaker for the Library of Congress, Columbia University, and the Kennedy Center, a mother, and among other distinguished venues. An editor and lifelong advocate for libraries, she has served on the advisory board of Smithsonian Libraries and Archives, and will do so again as of January 2023. So there you are. And she is just a marvelous, marvelous storyteller. This is, of all the storytellers this year, she and Adam and Diane Macklin are the three that I guarantee I won't miss. I never miss the Speak Storytell series, but still, there's some real special people there. And we have a whole lineup of special people. We're not sure yet of the upcoming concert, whether we'll be in the Opera House or whether we'll be in the Frank Center. So you can check at speakstoryseries.com and get all the information. You can also get a season ticket. And I will remind you that the Tuesday and Wednesday night are both in person. And Tuesday is also on Zoom. So looking forward to Carmen Agra Devi. There you go.
Sounds good to me. I'm planning to be there.
Good. In person, who knows?
Oh, I haven't gotten that far yet. We'll see.
Yeah. Oh, I just wondered. Okay. So, are you ready for me to begin?
Absolutely.
Because this is going to be a little bit of difference also, you know, even though I am going to keep with the theme, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So what I did was I found some quotes from famous women. I have some stories too, but these are things that I picked out of a whole bunch of quotes. And some of the famous women they listed were famous because of things that I didn't choose. I didn't know what to do with them. I thought somebody might say, who cares? But anyway, here are a couple of famous women quotes. Women are like tea bags. We don't know our strength until we are in hot water. And that is a quote from Eleanor Roosevelt, former first lady. I always wonder why they say former first lady or former president, some instead of saying she was first lady, because they address all former presidents as president. And I think it's one of those male things. You know, okay.
Over explaining.
Oh yes, and making sure that the males get a little bit better treatment. You know, I don't know. Okay, think like a queen. A queen is not afraid to fail. Failure is another stepping stone to greatness. That is a quote from Oprah, who is famous for a lot of things. TV host, producer, and putter of messages under the seats of her audience members so they can all scream and have a good time because she's given them some kind of prize. And she did that in her show for years. Above all, be the heroine of your life, not the victim. Nora Ephron, writer. I like that very much. That's good. Okay. Whatever women do, they must do twice as well as men to be thought of half as good. Luckily, for most women, this is not difficult. I love that one too. Charlotte Whitten, the mayor of Ottawa. And finally, if you want something said, ask a man. If you want something done, ask a woman. Margaret Thatcher. Yeah. If I've in the past on this radio show, if I said anything that any female could take as negative, I hope this will fix that a little bit. Because I love women. I'm proud of women. I've always been a fighter for women's rights. But I think sometimes I say things maybe without being plugged into the thinking process there. And I say things and then I see a look, especially on your face, Fanny, like, what are you thinking of? and then I hope that you go on and on about something else so it'll go away.
Don't watch the face. Don't watch the face.
That was one of my famous sayings. If you run into students of mine from 40 years ago, 50 years ago, 30 years ago, I often would say, do not look at my face and try to understand what it means. You know, whether I'm upset or happy. I said, my face does not listen to my brain. Sometimes my face tries to think about something when I'm saying something completely different. And so that caused a 30-minute discussion in my class about faces. True, especially from the boys. You know, I never know what my mother's thinking. I think she's mad as anything about something I did. And then she gives me a big hug and smiles and says, have a good day. And now I'm so confused as I go out the door. So I could go on to my first story.
Okay. Those were great quotes.
I liked them very much. It was a list, you know, 45 quotes from 45 famous women. And it was, you know, on a site that was honoring women's achievements. And also some of the women, I mean, Margaret Thatcher and Eleanor Roosevelt, pretty interesting speakers. Okay. This is about Gloria Richardson. She was born in Baltimore during the Depression. Gloria Richardson's family would move across the Chesapeake Bay to a small town near the current site of the Harriet Tubman Underground Railroad National Historic Park. Whew. Boy, that is a mouthful. In Church Creek, Maryland. After graduating from Howard University, Richardson worked for the federal government during World War II before becoming a mother and homemaker. After being unable to land a job as a social worker because of the color of her skin, her daughter's participation in protests against segregation and racial inequality led her to the movement and eventually, according to Bustle, which is some kind of a magazine, to critiquing how Black women were treated in the modern civil rights movement. Richardson would then go on to be the only woman on stage at the 1963 March on Washington. Gloria Richardson was the first woman in the country to lead a grassroots civil rights organization outside the Deep South. She helped found and lead the Cambridge Nonviolent Action Committee during a period of civil unrest 50 years ago, caused by racism and lingering segregationist practices. The 19th Amendment is celebrating its 100th anniversary, did celebrate its 100th anniversary in the year 2020. But there were states and U.S. territories where women could vote before 1920. So Gloria Richardson was instrumental in working for getting more freedom, freedom that was already granted to women, but especially in the South. And Maryland is considered a Southern state, whether anybody likes it or not. And even though it wasn't a Southern state in the Civil War, if you ask anybody now, they would say, of course it was. What's the matter with you? Okay. So are you ready for a story you're ready to tell?
I am. I had to make sure my mute button was off. So I'm talking today about three divas. These were my dad's special women. These three women always made my dad smile. I wish I knew for sure whether he managed to be in the audience for any of them. But aside from the fact that my father was born on St. Patrick's Day in March, this is a special month. This is a month that had some special meaning for all three of these women. I did find a YouTube 5.5 minute clip of these three from a 1979 performance they did together in Pasadena, California for CBS television from March 14th, another March event, 1979. They're collaborating on a medley of hits that starts and ends with "When We Were Playing with the Band," but in between includes some of their hit songs and references to the Savoy Ballroom in Harlem, Savoy Ballroom. So they do some verses of "Sweet Georgia Brown," "Don't Mean a Thing If It Ain't Got That Swing," "Joshua Fought the Battle of Jericho," and a lot of scat singing. This was a show honoring Pearl Bailey, who's in the center of the group for this show, and they're honoring her 40 years in show business. The other two, of course, were Sarah Vaughan and Ella Fitzgerald. Sarah Vaughan, possibly my dad's favorite. It's hard for me to tell which of these was really his favorite. There were other singers too that he loved, but these are the three that were iconic in my childhood. Sarah Vaughan was born in Newark, New Jersey. Today, on this day in 1924, March 27th. So this is the anniversary of the birth of Sarah Vaughan today. She died in 1990 in April at age 66, died pretty young in Hidden Hills, California. Of course, she was a vocalist and a pianist, known for her sultry contralto, but also for her four-octave range. She sang, she could sing soprano through baritone, and she often would in the same song. Her record labels were Columbia, Mercury, Verb, Roulette, and Pablo at the end.
So anyway, yeah, see if you can come.
The divine, it's Sarah Vaughan, had an active professional career from the age of 18 when she won an amateur contest at the Apollo.
I was going to call
singing Body and Soul, and was awarded a week of performances at the Apollo and opened for Ella Fitzgerald that season. This is the fall of
auto workers up against.
What's 18 plus 24? 1932. 1942. Another song that she's famous for is Misty. And I can remember walking to school, singing to myself, walk my way, and a thousand violins begin to play. It might be the sound of your hello, that music I hear. I get misty whenever you're near.
I wondered what exactly was in it.
The second diva that my dad educated me about and talked about often was Pearl Bailey, born March 29th. Just 2 days from today is the anniversary of Pearl Bailey's birth in 1918. So she was somewhat older than Sarah Vaughan. She was born in Newport News, Virginia, moved eventually to Philadelphia with her mother when her parents divorced. And her brother, Bill Bailey, was a professional tap dancer and talked her into entering a contest at the Pearl Theater in Philadelphia when she was just 15. So the early 1930s. The prize was a 2-week gig with the theater. So this is similar to Sarah Vaughan's experience. And after that, she entered a second contest at the Apollo in New York, and winning that contest decided her on a career as a vocalist. It also launched her Philadelphia nightclub career. And after that, she was hired with the USO, the United Service Organizations, to entertain the troops at its founding in 1941. And she went to sing for GIs at camp shows and moved soon after that to New York City to be a performer. She started in vaudeville, but her Broadway debut in 1946 in St. Louis Woman got her started in acting, and she had a lot of acting credentials. She did some amazing work both on and off Broadway, and won an award in St. Louis Woman for her work in St. Louis Woman as the best Broadway newcomer. After that, she had the lead in the Black production of Hello, Dolly, 1967, with Cab Calloway, and won a Tony Award for her performance. In the award was 1968, and that was such a popular show, and she was so popular as the lead, that in 1975, the producer David Merrick took the cast to Broadway. And they packed the house there with a long and wildly popular run for that show. She also got an Emmy for The Fairy Godmother in Cindy Eller, modern fairy tale, the Black production of Cinderella. She made the top 10 playlist with It Takes Two to Tango. That's as early as 1952. She had so many other awards and stellar invitations. She was she sang at the White House at the invitation of Betty Ford, or the President of Egypt, at a state dinner during negotiations, the Mideast talks. She got a Screen Actors Guild Lifetime Achievement Award in 76 and the Presidential Medal of Freedom in 88. One of the best parts of doing research on this was listening to old clips and seeing the all of these women, that their range in terms of the people they sang with and the different songs they sang. There's a clip of her singing with Jimmy Durante, Bill Bailey, Please Come Home. That's just a hoot.
I gotta go out today and get
her first appearance in London was in 1958. She spotlighted that her sad, sad song, Poor Butterfly, based on the opera, Madame Butterfly. She was known as a diehard Mets fan. So Pearl Bailey got to sing the national anthem at Shea Stadium in 1969 for the World Series. And she was featured in a highlights film of that series. She sang the anthem again for the 1981 World Series between the Yankees and the LA Dodgers at Yankee Stadium. And she did voices for animated movies in the 70s and 80s and iconic commercials, which I cannot understand how I never saw any of these commercials. She did commercials for Duncan Hines, Jell-O, and Westinghouse. And as an avid TV watcher for some of those years, I can't understand how I never saw any of them. Anyway, my favorite in the long list of her accomplishments, so talking about Pearl Bailey here, is her tenacity, working 7 years for a theology degree from Georgetown University. She worked with the philosopher Wilfred Bessin, who was the French guy, the French philosopher, who's best known for introducing Jean-Paul Sartre and his work on existentialism to an American audience. And the book that Descent wrote on globalization as a unifying force. This is a heavy thinking dude. He wrote about however important and inviolable our separate individual and personal truths are, whether as persons or as nations, humanity will only survive if we embrace planet-wide cooperation and collaboration.
All right, well, good luck, man.
So Descent taught at half a dozen universities around the U.S., theology, taking concepts from theology and anthropology and ethics, and formulating this theory of the advancement of humanity. But Pearl Bailey found him at Georgetown University and studied with him theories of human understanding and the salvation of humanity through peace work, reaching that milestone of this theology degree in 1985 when she was 65 years old. After that, Pearl Bailey wrote several books of her own, generally autobiographical, but the last two that she called Hurry Up America and Spit. I have to read this book because of that title. That's from 1976. And Between You and Me from 1889, which covers her political views and her hope for humanity, including her experiences as a student of higher education. So that's another really good one that I want to check out. I haven't read any of her books yet, but I found all six of her books on Abe Books, ABE Books, so I know they're available and I'm hoping to read them. Raw Pearl, Talking to Myself, Pearl's Kitchen, Dewey's Tale About a Young Maple Tree. That's intriguing too. But my favorite Pearl Bailey story from my dad is
he would just fall out laughing every time he talked about her, seeing her on stage. I think this was on TV. She came out glittering with diamonds, dragging a fur coat across the stage behind her. And to me, that's just quintessential Pearl Bailey, because she was totally irreverent and willing to speak truth to power within certain parameters. She was not a radical person in politics per se, but she was pretty wild on stage. Ella Fitzgerald, who closes out this threesome, was born before her other two jazz sisters in April of 1917, so just about a month later in the annual calendar than her two sisters, but a year younger than either one of them. She was also born in Newport News, as Pearl Bailey was, and Ella lived the longest. She was the eldest, but she soldiered on. Pearl and Sarah both died in 1990, and Ella lived on 6 more years. So she died at not quite 80 years old. She was the queen of jazz, the first lady of song, but perhaps most famous for her scat singing, her improvisation, and what my archivist mother used to call syllable singing with disdain. My mom didn't mind it so much in jazz, but for some reason it really bugged her in rock and roll. And she would walk around muttering when she could hear rock and roll playing, calling it syllable singing, you know, that doo-dop and repetition of syllables just drove her crazy. Now, I've always been fond of scat, maybe because it's the ultimate improv music. Not only the words, but the rhythms and the melodies too. And I wish I had known at the time that I was watching the disdain on my mother's face. I wish I had known in arguing with this archivist mother that different forms of scat occur all over the world in indigenous cultures. And the great folklorist Alan Lomax acknowledged the history and traditions of scat when he recorded an interview with Jelly Roll Morton and talked about one of Jelly Roll and Louis Armstrong's predecessors, Joe Sims, singing scat way back at the end of the 19th century, way before Louis Armstrong was singing scat in the 1920s. Anyway, in researching scat so I could not just love it but be able to talk about it a little bit, I learned that musicologists credit Irish diddling and lilting from Ireland and Scotland, where traditional musical instruments were banned for decades by those English colonizers who came over and took over in Ireland and Scotland. German yodeling is considered a precursor to scat, or a different kind of syllable singing. And the Sami, in indigenous peoples of Norway and the Scandinavian countries, sing yoik. It's a kind of chanting syllabic music. And even speaking in tongues among different religious communities is considered related to scat and syllable music. Ella herself, just to close out here, Ella had some big hits early on, but amazingly, her breakout hit was, believe it or not, A Tisket a Tasket, that she co-wrote with drummer and band leader Chick Webb in 1935. The Depression years were very, very hard on a lot of singers. And in Harlem, it was particularly tough. And Ella, that's where Ella was at that time. She had a tough, hard scrabble life for a while, singing on the street and working as the lookout at a brothel. And even for a time, living in the New York Colored Orphans Asylum
this was brand new to me, where my great-grandfather received most of his education as a child and a young teen. Different building. They were the Orphans Asylum was in Riverdale, New York by then, but same institution. Ella worked with Duke Ellington and Louis Armstrong, the Ink Spots. She had 14 Grammys, won a National Medal of the Arts, won the NAACP's National Association for the Advancement of Colored People's first ever President's Award. And like Pearl Bailey, she also won the Presidential Medal of Freedom. So I'm excited about playing more of these divas' music and reading some books.
Wow, that was very interesting. And I'm sorry, I waited a little bit before I turned my sound back on because I thought you were gonna do some scat.
No, that I would like to practice that. I think that would be an incredible thing to do. I was at a storytelling gig Saturday, and I was asked to tell stories about women's history. So I practiced some of that on the radio last week. T.H. Barnes talks about women's history. It was a tighter program by the time I got there on Saturday than what I told on the radio. But I did close my piece of the program with a really brief one verse of, "Oh Mary, don't you weep, don't you mourn." And oh, I felt like I did a terrible job. I lost the tune in the middle of that one verse. The group helped me out. I got them to sing with me and they got me back on track, but it was a bit mortifying, especially since immediately after me, there was a praise singer who was amazing. And then after him, a young guy, was one of the elders of the Griot Circle, Deborah Fokunle, whose PhD son is the new president of NABS, the National Association of Black Storytellers. And she is descended from three generations of women singers. And she did an amazing job telling her family musical story and singing, honoring her mother and her grandmother for their education of her as a vocalist. And I was just cowering in my seat. She was so amazing. She was very supportive and friendly to me and all the other tellers who were there. We all had a good time and I felt nurtured, but I have a lot of work to do. But singing scat would be a way for me to make up for my chagrin yesterday, but that will take a lot of work. It's not going to happen this year.
Off into the future. Right. Well,
yeah, like the next century, maybe.
I just made a note on my pad here that I'm giving Fanny 1 year in the March of 2024. Fanny is going to do a scat on the radio show.
Well, you know, one of the challenges of scat is that the real scat impresarios, it's all improv. You don't memorize it and right. Stand up and do it. You do it off the cuff, and both you know, the melodies change. And I have enough trouble keeping the basic melody without improvising on it.
Yeah.
Although one of my voice coaches is trying to get me to do alto parts now. So we'll see how that goes.
Wow. I
have the deepest voice of the church choir. I mean, it's a tiny little choir there. On a really good day, there are five of us. Sometimes there's only three of us. So, I sing the lowest of those five. So she's pushing me to learn alto parts because she thinks we'll be amazing, even more amazing.
All right. I don't think I knew that you sang in the choir.
Well, in fact, I didn't know
you had a choir.
Right. Well, it, as I say, it's barely a choir. This is the Unitarian Universalist Church of Hagerstown, where, you know, all together we have something like 50 members. And there are five of us who are willing to stand up in front of people and sing all by ourselves.
Wow.
It is a very small group.
Yeah. Well, 10% of the church population.
That's pretty good. Right.
You know, 10% of the church population is a good sized choir.
Well, that's not the entire church population, but that's the members.
Right.
There's lots of other people who come regularly and say they're not joiners and they're never going to join any church, but they like hanging out with us. So you take what you can get, right?
And do you charge them for that privilege of hanging out with you?
I do not examine the collection basket as it goes around to see who's giving what. But most of the people that come regularly do contribute.
Well, sure.
When they say they don't want to be a member, they don't mean they don't want to pay. They mean they cannot respect any organization that would accept them as a member.
Yeah.
That's a common line I hear from my friends.
You know who that's from, don't you?
Will, what's his name?
The
not Will news, Smith.
The newspaper guy, Will Rogers.
Yeah.
Was it Will? Yeah.
Yeah.
And also another person who said that every once in a while in performances and even on his show when I was a young man was Groucho Marx.
Yeah, I believe that.
Yeah.
For some reason, my mother had a great antipathy to Groucho Marx. I think because he was even more irreverent than my mother was. My mother was reverent of the classics. And it bugged her that he was also fairly misogynistic publicly. I don't know what his life was, his personal life was like, but he would say outrageous things on the radio and on TV that really got her hackles up.
Yeah, it was the script, you know.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, I always liked him very much. I like this show a lot. So,
can you give, before you tell another story, can you give me a time check? Not a sound check.
A time check.
Yes.
Well, this is a Polish time.
Okay, Polish time.
36 minutes.
Okay. That works.
Good. A Polish check. No. A Polish time. Instead of a time check, a time Polish. How's that?
Okay.
None of it makes a lot of sense. Okay. So, shall I tell another small famous person story?
I think you should tell whatever tickles your fancy. We have quite a bit of time left.
Well, I have two more people to share. This one is Nellie Bly. And I've known that name ever since I was a kid. And for a long time in my life, if you had said, okay, so you know the name Nellie Bly, what did she do? And I would just look at you and say, oh yeah? Because I knew the name and I didn't know why. I always thought, I always thought she was like an adventurer, but that was the. And then when I learned more about her, and here it goes. Nellie Bly, famous investigative journalist, Nellie Bly, who was born Elizabeth Cochran, was born in 1864 in Pennsylvania when a Pittsburgh Dispatch journalist wrote an editorial claiming that working women were a monstrosity. Whew. Boy, that guy must have had a lot of guts. Bly wrote a scathing rebuttal that got her a job offer from the paper. She was 18 at the time. Began writing for the paper and with the pen name Nellie Bly, inspired by a popular song of the time. After 2 years, she began writing for the New York World In her most famous assignment, she spent 10 days living in a mental institution to expose the truth about the conditions the patients faced in that institution. Her expose launched a major investigation into the treatment of mental patients. In 1889, she set out to travel around the world in 80 days, emulating the hero of Jules Verne's 1873 adventure novel. And she made it in only 72 days. Take that, Jules Verne. How about that? I like that. It was short. But what a powerful ending to that just little blurb. You know, take that, Jules Verne. That's a good bet. And there is a modern version of Around the World in 80 Days. It's on one of those streaming services. I don't know. Hulu, Boohoo, somebody. Terry and I watched two episodes of it. It was pretty interesting. It was very interesting. And I loved the original movie. David Niven was in the original. And,
right.
He played the guy. I don't think I ever read anything by Jules Verne that I didn't consider worth reading. He was one of my absolute favorite authors. Wrote in one what I consider to be one of the best books I've ever written. And that's Moby Dick, which is a great story.
But you're not connecting Jules Verne to Moby Dick?
No, why?
Oh, I thought I got confused there in the middle.
Oh, okay. Okay. Anyway.
When you're telling stories, my mind's going a mile a minute and I'm out in Mars. I was actually thinking about Jules Verne's story about the trip to the moon.
Yes.
And that's, so when you started talking about Moby Dick, I thought, what? Jules Verne. I had missed the middle there.
Okay. Well, shall I do my last story?
Sure.
Or the one I'm considering the last. Let's see. Actually, I'm going to put somebody else in. And the one I had thought.
Yeah.
You might know Hedy Lamarr from the silver screen. She starred in many films from the golden age of Hollywood, including Samson and Delilah and The Strange Woman. I saw Samson and Delilah when I was a kid. But her film career is far from her only noteworthy achievement. She was also a brilliant inventor. She was born in 1914 in Austria and moved to the United States in hopes of pursuing a film career. In 1942, in the midst of her Hollywood success, she and composer George Antheil received a patent for a device that could change radio signal frequencies. The purpose of the technology was to keep military enemies, specifically the Nazis, from decoding messages. But it did more than that. It paved the way for much of the wireless technology we use today. As if that weren't enough, she left her Austrian husband after learning that he was selling weapons to the Nazis. So, and I had heard that once before, and I first didn't believe it when did some research, but she was given a patent for that invention, and she has been recognized by the government for aiding the war effort.
You've told Hedy Lamarr's bits of Hedy Lamarr's story in the past, and I remembered that. It made a big impression on me. Because I always thought of her as a glamour girl, especially Samson and Delilah. And there's a whole different side of some of these.
Oh, my goodness, yes. That is just incredible. Okay, I have one more that I want to share, if you don't mind.
Mm-hmm, sure.
Okay, this lady's name is Alice Coachman. Alice Coachman was the first African-American woman to win Olympic gold. I thought I knew everything about the Olympics, all the interesting things. I knew I didn't know everything, but I always prided myself on, you know, having tidbits about the Olympics going all the way back to 1896. But this one really surprised me. She was born in 1923 and grew up in Georgia, where segregation prevented her from joining sports teams. So she trained on her own. She eventually competed and broke records in the Amateur Athletic Union National Championship and received a scholarship to the Tuskegee Institute. She was winning national championships in the 1940s, but was unable to compete in the Olympics. The games were canceled in 1940 and 44. Finally, Coachman competed in the 1948 games in London, where she not only won a gold medal, but set a record in the high jump. And she still wasn't done breaking barriers. In 1952, Coca-Cola reached out to her to be their spokesperson, making her the first African-American, male or female, to get an endorsement deal. That's, to me, an absolute amazing thing. And I did not know about her. And I have a note in my little book over here that I should try to look up her biography. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm sure there's been a biography written about her. So, if anybody had asked me when the first black woman to win a gold medal in Olympics was, I would have probably searched for some African lady, you know, just because I know our country's history is not so good when it comes to civil rights and stuff like that. Okay, so you're on.
I'm on. Okay.
And if you don't have something, we can just prattle.
Well, I was going to talk, two things. One is to talk a little bit more about that program yesterday at Manifest Wonders Christian Church in Baltimore, at the corner of Grantley and Edmondson Avenue, or Route 40 and Grantley Avenue. Sweet little church. And a lot of people were there. I think there were at least 50 people there for Women's History Month. And the pastor, Lee Michaels, shared some information about the women he had researched so he could talk about them. He chose figures from five or six different fields, so an entertainer and sports figure, a scientist, person from the arts. And one of the women I talked about as T.H. Barnes, talking about women who had influenced him, was Ida B. Wells. And Pastor Lee Michaels had researched Ida B. Wells himself. So we had a little back and forth about that. And that was fun. And I already mentioned there was a praise singer who has a couple CDs out, I think, and I'm going to try to see if I can find one of them. His first name was Restine, R-E-S-T-I-N-E, and I didn't bring the program in so I don't remember his last name. But the highlight of that program was Janice Curtis Green, immediate past president of NABS, might be two back actually, who has come to Stories in the Round and told stories for us in Hagerstown. She's now doing Harriet Tubman, and I had seen her perform as Harriet Tubman last summer for the Juneteenth celebration in Washington County at the farm
I think it's called Rockland Farm, Rockland Plantation, which was at one time the home of James W. C. Pennington, who I spoke about a couple of weeks ago on the radio, who escaped out of slavery from this farm, not in between Sharpsburg and Hagerstown, Maryland. And that's where the Juneteenth celebration of the Western Maryland African American Historical Society was held. And I told a really short story there, but Janice had a 15 or 20 minute presentation on Harriet Tubman and did a wonderful job there in costume. She gets really fierce as Tubman talking about the struggle for freedom and how we're not done yet. And she did that program again Saturday at Manifest Wonders Church. And she blew me out of the water. I had already seen her do it once, and yet it was magical all over again. She got a standing ovation from the audience. And I hope she's going to do that program over and over again, because for me, she is Harriet Tubman. She has an interesting way of talking about time and handling with chronology. You know, when you perform as a dead person, person who's now dead but is famous, you have to find a way to bridge that gap for your audience between those times and this time. And she does it in a different, unique way. That I have to study some more, because I'm not clear how she gets away with it, but she does. Were you going to say something?
I was going to say, I believe the Harriet Tubman probably has the single most female performers doing her than any other performers I know of in storytelling. In performance thing. I'm not an expert by any means on anything. However, I have come across so many ads and blurbs, especially through Facebook, on people doing ladies performing as Harriet Tubman. In fact, one of my early track stars, a young black girl, who was a hurdler on my track team and who gave me the incredible nickname of Papa Smurf and presented me with a blue hoodie, sweatshirt, and had Papa Smurf on the back of it. And her name is Jackie Murray, and she is a person, and she does theater and improvisations. And she performs as Harriet Tubman. And she's just the only person I know personally who does that. But I've come across many, many, many others. And I'm sure that, you know, maybe somebody listening to this radio broadcast will send a note to John or call in and say, here is the list that I was able to find of women who perform as Harriet Tubman, which would be a nice thing. Or maybe there is someone else that they would perform. I imagine, you know, there might be. I don't know if any storytellers do Helen Keller. Yes.
Keller.
Because she was a great speaker for someone who didn't talk at all as a child. Until her not guardian, but her companion was able to spell out the word water on her hand. And she made the connection between water coming out of the pipe and that what the symbols that her companion had put on her hand, on her palm with her hands, made a connection that those symbols on her hand meant water. And that was the beginning of her understanding about language. And that's pretty amazing that somebody could do that. Mm-hmm. And I would think it would be a difficult performance for a sighted person to perform that. Although
people, Patty Duke did it.
Yeah.
Before we get too far along, I want to talk about stories in the round.
Okay, that was my next question.
All right, so I have our opening act. Our first session on April 24th will be Susan Gordon, who will be talking about and reading from her novel that is, I think, about 80% finished. But she is not there yet. You and I have both heard excerpts and heard her talk about the novel, and it's really coming along. It's quite impressive. She's going to talk a lot about the actual history of Laurel Fork and West Virginia and the way that the Allegheny Forest was clear cut. Around the turn of the century, from the 19th to the 20th century, by the lumber companies, and how the land was, what the soil was washed away, the waters were polluted, and it was a very hard place to live in those times. And she's going to share the mentors that she's met up there who helped her do the research for this book and the characters that are in this book. And I'm really looking forward to that because it's been several years. I think it's been at least 2 years since I've heard anything from the novel. So I'm excited about that. 7 p.m., April 24th. Then in May, the newly formed Western Maryland Association of Black Storytellers is going to be performing and sharing the anthology, the story anthology from the Maryland Griot Circles, the Griot Circle of Maryland. This new organization will be affiliated with the Griot Circle and with the National Association of Black Storytellers, but it's going to take it. The requirement for that affiliation is 2 years of success. And so this might be their first public appearance as storytellers, as the association.
And where is that based?
Hagerstown. All of the current members. Well, that's not true. One of the members is from out of state. Mama Linda Goss is a member, but the founding, all of the other founding members are within Hagerstown.
And is that on the 29th of May?
It's the fourth.
Oh, okay.
Friday. It's always, so far, it's always right. The fourth Friday. It's the fourth Monday. So I believe it's the 22nd.
Yes. Okay. And what's the name of the group? I'm sorry.
This is probably not the official, I don't have the official name in my head, but it's the Western Maryland Black Storytellers Guild. And by the time we get there in May, I will have memorized the official name. And then in June, Andy Offit Irwin will be here.
Oh no, not him again.
I'm going to quote you.
Okay, June 26th, and he'll like that. He'll think it's
yes.
funny. Yes. Because he'll say, well, Stosh isn't very funny many times, but he's trying.
So those are the programs that I have contracts for
Andy.
So far.
Oh, good. Well, I'm looking forward to each one of those.
Well, I am really looking forward to that.
Okay.
I think we are at something like 56 minutes. Is that correct?
Yes, it's actually 58 on my chronometer.
Okay, this is Fanny Crawford.
And Stosh Ziolkowski.
Your co-hosts for the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour. We're independent community radio broadcasting from Martinsburg, West Virginia, Bolivar, West Virginia, and Hagerstown, Maryland, enlightenradio.org. If you want to see 5 years worth of storytelling or listen to 5 years worth of storytelling from the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour, you can go to talltales.enlightenradio.org and be overwhelmed by weeks and weeks and weeks of storytelling. The Storytelling Hour offers you, our listeners, a window into the world of telling by traditional and non-traditional tellers, encouraging our listening community to share, preserve, and expand all of our stories. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned for John Case.
Well, very, very smooth jazz, just extremely smooth.
smooth jazz.
You just keep not